Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to the Torah portion for February 8th and 9th, 2013, from sundown to sundown. This teaching is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this message. And before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech haolam. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, Creator of all things, and the Lawgiver, the Savior, the Messiah, Prince of Peace, Almighty God, Eternal Father. All of those things belong to you, Abba, and we thank you that you have given us your law, Abba, for us to use in our everyday lives and to show that we do love you and that we are loyal to you. We ask that you come back quickly, return and set up your kingdom quickly, Abba. And I just pray that you will not let anything that I say grow or prosper, but only the things that you say, Abba, only your word, not my word. I ask for your protection for the brethren all over the earth, Abba, as we celebrate this Shabbat. Thank you for your Shabbats. We love you, and we praise your name in the name of Yeshua. Amen. This Torah portion is called Mishpatim. It means ordinances. It's Exodus 21, verse 1 to chapter 24, verse 18. The Haftarah is Jeremiah 34, verses 8 to 22 and 33 to verses 25 and 26. The Brit Hadashah is Matthew 5:38-42, chapter 15, verses 1-20, Mark chapter 7, verses 1-23, and Acts chapter 23, verses 1-11. Last week's Torah portion gave us the constitution, what I call the constitution of the new Hebrew nation. We so often view the law as, you know, just a bunch of behavioral guidelines with spiritual principles behind them. But they're much more than that. They're not just that. These are the laws of a nation that's going to inhabit the earth, like America inhabits the earth, and like Rome inhabited the earth, and like, let's say, what's another nation that inhabits the earth? China. You know, China has its laws, and China would not be China without laws, without its particular laws. America would not be America without its particular laws. Islam is a spread among many nations, but it would not be Islam without its laws. And now the Hebrews, who are also spread among many nations, have their laws. The Hebrew nation that is now coming out of Mystery Babylon needs these laws of Jehovah to govern them. So let's understand what this law really is, because it's more than just spiritual principles, and it's more than just letters of the law. You see, the sum of the two parts, the spirit of the law and the letter of the law, are greater than the sum of their parts. Letter one, spirit one, does not equal two. They are much more than that. But I think it's time for us to learn how to adjudicate life's situations according to this law that the Lord gave us, because I believe very soon we're going to be using this law in the land. And you and I who are listening to this today, who are listening to Mishpatim this Shabbat, we're in training in order to be able to teach others who come into the kingdom that don't have a clue about this law. So this is why I have broken this law, not just in Mishpatim, but the Torah altogether, down into its let's say, component parts. You know, the laws of America, for instance, are broken up according to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and then there are amendments, and then there's legislation that gets slipped underneath each one of those categories. The same thing is true of the Hebrew nation's laws. And so, for me, it's easiest to see the Ten Commandments as the Constitution. And that Constitution has two parts. It has two sections. The first section is the first five commandments that have to do with our relationship with the Lord. And the second section is the next five commandments that have to do with our relationship with each other. They fall under this heading this way, I believe, because of what it says in Deuteronomy 6:5 and Leviticus 19:18. In Deuteronomy 6:5, it says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might." And Leviticus 19:18 says, "You shall not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." So the entire law then that comes after those first 10 are given, those other laws fit under the first 10 commandments just as if those first 10 commandments were subheadings under the sections of loving the Lord and loving everyone else. And so adherence to all of the law then becomes something that when we do that, it's as if we've done it to the Lord. You know, when we do something to our neighbor according to the law, we've done it to the Lord. And if we have messed up with our neighbor, well, we've done it to the Lord, because the Lord is connected to our neighbor in the same way that he's connected to us through his Spirit. And so when we bump into each other, whether it's a happy bump or a hurtful and painful bump, well, that has been done to the Lord. And so we need these laws to keep us in line, but also to show the world the Lord's holiness and righteousness on the earth. Because done right, these laws eradicate evil and bring out the good. Now, under the subsections of loving God and loving everyone else, there are two kinds of laws. There is judicial law and statutory law. Statutory law is the law that deals mostly with the sacrifices, although they sometimes intermingle with each other. But the judicial law is the law that deals with civil issues, and that's what Mishpatim is all about. This is what you might call civil law, but it's judicial law. This is how we deal with the situations when we bump into others, whether accidentally or deliberately. We do it through the judicial law. So, what does a nation governed by the laws of the Lord need then? If we're going to be governed and use these laws to be judicious and to help us make proper judgments when we bump into each other, what do we need? Well, we need judges who are able to be impartial and who can properly adjudicate and make decisions. It is time that we become able to do this. It's time for us to become mature enough to render correct verdicts according to the law, but to be able to do it according to the spirit of the law. If we go to 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6, it says, who also has made us able ministers of the New Testament, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. You see, in dealing with the law, you can't have just letter, and you can't have just Spirit. You've got to have letter and Spirit. The letter by itself kills, and the Spirit gives life, but it just sends you off in all kinds of directions. The letter gives direction to the Spirit, and the Spirit gives life to the letter. You see? Exodus 21:1 says, "Now these are the judgment that you shall set before them." Now, who is this talking about here? Who is the you in this sentence? Well, it's Moses. You see, let me explain something here. We have just seen in last week's Torah portion in Yitro that the children of Israel heard the Lord's voice and it scared them to death. And they said, "Moses, you get this for us. We can't stand to hear the Lord's voice." And later on, we're going to find out that the Lord said that was a good decision because, you know, they realized and he realized that they were not mature enough to hear his voice. You know, Moses was mature enough. But be that as it may, we are now at the next 5 minutes, you see, where after they backed off and the Lord said, "Okay, Moses, I'm going to give these to you." So Mishpatim happens within minutes of Yitro. These two go together. They happened on the same day. This didn't happen tomorrow or next week or next month that the Lord, you know, let the people just, you know, kind of hang out until he decided to go ahead and give them more of the laws. No, right after those 10 commandments were given and they said they couldn't stand to listen to his voice, Moses then was given this. So let's go on. Mishpatim is translated as ordinance, but it also means a verdict pronounced judicially, especially a sentence or formal decree. According to Strong's, it's Strong's number 4941. It can be translated as judgment and many other words, but it's more important for us to understand that Mishpatim is a decree for maintaining justice. What is the difference between an ordinance and a statute? And what does a decree have to do with ordinances and statutes? Well, a decree is a pronouncement. So a decree is made for an ordinance, and that decree has the force of law behind it. The ordinance is the law. The decree is the pronouncement. And who makes decrees? Well, decrees to create ordinances happen by either a single authoritative individual or a panel of individuals, like a city council, for instance. And a statute is a pronouncement or decree created by a legislative body. Local governments, cities, counties, you know, they make ordinances, but states and federal governments create statutes. That's the way it works in America. However, we're talking about the Hebrew nation. So who is it that makes all the decrees for the judicial law and the statutory law? Who does that? Well, Jehovah does that. The ordinances and statutes are the how-to instructions of the Constitution of the Hebrew nation, also known as the Ten Commandments. The ordinances and statutes, these decrees that the Lord makes, that our King makes, the ordinances and statutes that he decrees, are the how-to instructions of our Constitution, which is the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments being the Constitution of the Hebrew nation. If we want to know how our King wants us to show our loyalty to Him, then it is not enough to just be able to recite the Ten Commandments. We have to know the decrees regarding the ordinances, the mishpatim, and the statutes, the chukah, according to the Hebrew language. Chukah means statutes, and that's a whole other set of laws. I guess people try to break them down as civil law and ceremonial law, but they kind of overlap in some instances. But what we find is that here in Mishpatim, these ordinances, judicial decrees fit very nicely under all of the 10 subheadings of the 10 commandments. For instance, which ordinances in this Torah portion go under the heading of "You shall not kill"? Well, let's take a look at that. Let's go to Exodus chapter 21 and verse 18. If men strive together, and one smite another with a stone or with his fist, and he die not, but keeps his bed, if he rise again and walks abroad upon his staff, then shall he that smote him be quit. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time, and shall cause him to be thoroughly healed. And if a man smite his servant or his maid with a rod, and he die under his hand, he shall surely be punished. Now, here we get into two other things, non-intentional injury and intentional injury. And in fact, this final intentional injury results in death. Now, so these are instances where you would need further adjudicating law. Which ordinances might go under the heading of honoring our parents? Well, here we go. Let's go to chapter 21, verse 2. If you buy a Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve, and in the seventh he shall go free for nothing. If he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master have given him a wife, and she have borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. And if the servant shall plainly say, "I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free," then his master shall bring him to the judges. He shall also bring him to the door or to the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through an awl, and he shall serve him for ever. And if a man sell his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the men servants do. If she please not her master who has betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. To sell her to a strange nation, he shall have no power, seeing he has dealt deceitfully with her. And if he has betrothed her unto his son, he shall deal with her after the manner of daughters. If he takes him another wife, for her food, her raiment, and her duty of marriage shall he not diminish. And if he do not these three to her, then shall she go out free without money. And now verse 15, and he that smites his father or his mother shall be surely put to death, and he that curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. That's a lot of ordinances Jehovah gave us regarding honoring our parents, but you might be wondering why I put the servants under the heading of honoring parents. This is because it isn't just our biological parents that the commandment speaks of. Remember, the letter of the law kills, but the spirit of it makes us alive. The spirit of the commandment to honor our parents extends to those who have authority over us, whether we are mere servants or bond servants. And what's the difference between a servant and a bond servant? Well, one is with the master to pay off his own debt and move on. The bondservant is with the master because he loves the wife and children that he had when he was in the master's house, and so he wants to be with the master. But either way, the servant and the bondservant of the Hebrew nation are bound by both the letter and the spirit of the law. So the master of the house stands in the position of authority and as a parent. This is true, of course, only in the Hebrew nation, where treating a servant well is a requirement. This sentiment does not extend to the Gentile nations. Exodus 21:22 says, "If a man strive and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall be surely punished according to the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. And if any mischief follow, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe." Where does that go within the 10 subheadings? Well, it goes under "you shall not kill." Why? Because of the woman's baby, her fruit. It was lost because the man caused its death inadvertently. But the mother is still alive, so the man needs to be punished. But if mischief follows, then the man must give his life. And what is mischief? Well, it's Strong 611. It's ason. It is a hurt. Mischief is a hurt. The woman has been hurt. Yet, we can be fairly sure the woman was hurt when the man attacked her, because she lost her baby. That was a hurt, yet it says in here that for that he is to be punished according as the woman's husband will lay upon him. Okay, so what other kind of hurt would there be that he could have to give his life for? Well, it's talking about if she is unable to bear more children because of the incident. You see, then that attacker killed all of her future children. Now let's go to Exodus 22, verse 1 and verse 5. "If a man shall steal an ox or a sheep and kill it or sell it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep." So he's supposed to restore 5 oxen for 1 ox and 4 sheep for 1 sheep. "If a man shall cause a field or vineyard to be eaten, and shall put in his beast, and shall feed in another man's field, of the best of his own field and of the best of his own vineyard shall he make restitution." Well, that's easy. These go under "you shall not steal." Let's go to Exodus 23, verses 1, 2, and 3. "You shall not raise a false report. Put not your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You shall not follow a multitude to do evil. Neither shall you speak in a cause to decline after many to wrest judgment. Neither shall you countenance a poor man in his cause." Well, this goes under the "you shall not bear false witness" category, see? Verse 10, "And 6 years you shall sow your land and shall gather in the fruits thereof, but the 7th year you shall let it rest and lie still, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field shall eat. In like manner you shall deal with your vineyard and with your olive yard. 6 days you shall do your work, and on the 7th day you shall rest. Then thine ox and thine ass may rest, and the son of your handmaid and the stranger may be refreshed." That goes under "remember the Sabbath." And then in verse 17, "Three times in the year all your males shall appear before the Lord your God." What subheading does that fall under? "I am the Lord your God." That's number 1, the first subheading. Under the first 5, where it says "you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart." And that first commandment there, and that first subheading is "I am the Lord your God." Exodus 23, verse 18, "You shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread, neither shall the fat of my sacrifice remain until the morning." Same thing. It goes under the subheading of, "I am the Lord your God." Exodus 23:32, "You shall make no covenant with them nor with their gods." Well, that's now under the second subheading or the second commandment. You are to have no other gods before you. So you're getting the point. You see how if you look at each one of these laws, then you can think about which of the 10 subheadings, which of the 10 commandments does this go under? Which one does it relate to? You see, it's important that we begin to view our law in a different way. We must view it as good for our nation, even at times when it seems to not be good for us personally. There are going to be times when things happen and we're at fault, and it's going to seem like, well, this is not a good law for me. But the fact of the matter is, the Lord is more concerned about His nation and keeping evil away from His nation than He is about our personal feelings or, you know, what might happen to us in the way of punishment, like having to make restitution for, you know, our animals, and if they eat somebody's field or if they gore someone. And unfortunately, we don't like the idea that these laws contain the penalty of death. But again, the law is designed to destroy iniquity and evil among us in order for the world to see Jehovah's holiness and righteousness. And violating the law by doing injustice because we don't know how to render a good decision and because we might not want to live by it gives the impression to the rest of the world that the law of Jehovah is not a just law, that it doesn't mean anything, that it's, passed away and is no longer in force. And they would be wrong about that, but they're not going to find that out until the judgment comes to the earth. The kingdom is going to be using these laws. And so we do need to know how to address situations according to the spirit of the law by looking at the letter. For instance, Exodus 23 verse 4 says, "If you meet your enemy's ox or his ass going astray, you shall surely bring it back to him again." Now, what did I mean when I said we need to learn how to address situations according to the spirit of the law by looking at the letter? Well, this is a good example here in Exodus 23:4 about our enemy's ox. You know, we don't think of our enemy as our neighbor, do we? Well, our enemy is our neighbor. Our Gentile neighbors are our neighbor. It's not just our brother that we like or our sister that we like that's our neighbor. If we see our enemy's ox or his ass going astray, you shall surely bring it back to him. Now, spiritually, this is the law of kindness, isn't it? But the letter of the law has to do with, you know, there's a tangible item here, and it has to be returned back to your enemy. So, is this simply about a lost ox? No, it could be a lost child, a lost wallet, a lost watch, or some other trinket. Let's take a look at what Yeshua said about this. Matthew 5:27-28. "You have heard that it was said of them of old time, 'You shall not commit adultery,' but I say to you that whosoever looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart." You see, The letter of the law is just, you know, don't commit adultery. But the spirit of the law is don't look at someone to commit adultery with that person. Even if you haven't done it physically, you've done it already in your heart, in your imagination. And so getting back to the ox, You see, you apply that same principle, and you don't determine that just because he's your enemy, you're not going to bring the ox back to him. And what if it's his wallet? You don't determine that because he's your enemy, that you're not going to return his wallet, his watch, or his trinket back to him. You determine that a lost item is a lost item, and that you're going to return it to the correct owner. And that is how the Spirit gives life to the letter of the law. The laws of God lay down the principles that we may extend beyond their plain meaning. You see, this is proper adjudication. Now, I want to move on and go down to Exodus 24 and start at verse 1. And he said to Moses, "Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship you afar off. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come nigh, neither shall the people go up with him." And Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words which the Lord has said will we do." And Moses wrote all of the words of the Lord, and rose up early in the morning and built an altar under the hill, and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men of the children of Israel, which offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And Moses took half of the blood and put it in basins, and half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant and read in the audience of the people, and they said, "All that the Lord has said will we do, and be obedient." And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people, and said, "Behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you concerning all these words." I want to focus for a minute on the sacrifices that produced the blood of the covenant. You see, we now have a book of the covenant, and now we have the blood of the covenant too. Now, why did this covenant require blood? Well, because all covenants require blood, first of all, but because this was these people's marriage to Yeshua. This was also their ordination, or was supposed to have been their ordination into the priesthood. They did not qualify as priests, which is why the Lord gave that priesthood to Levi, because they rejected their ordination when they backed off. But the covenant still had to be made with the nation, because there you are in the middle of the wilderness. They've been redeemed. They've been delivered. We've been through some tests already. And the Lord is wanting to go and set up his house in Israel, in the nation, and create the city of Jerusalem and move forward and, you know, have these people and their descendants as his people. So I want to show you, though, that this blood of this covenant has to do with the blood that was shed in Genesis 15 at that covenant when the Father and Yeshua walked between the pieces. In Genesis 15:17, it says, "And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace, that's regarded as the Father, and a burning lamp, that's regarded as Yeshua, that passed between those pieces." Because the burning lamp, or Yeshua, walked through the pieces on behalf of the children of Israel, who are only now, 430 years later, standing at Mount Sinai, there has to be a way to connect them to the covenant of the pieces, which is the royal land grant covenant for their inheriting the land. See, what happened there in Genesis 15 was the promise that there would be people to inherit the land, and that the inheritors of the land would be the descendants of Abraham. So the royal grant covenant was for the land, for the descendants of Abraham to inherit that land. So now, because of the blood in this covenant, they are connected to the land, and they are agreed, they have agreed to keep the law that is required to uphold the Lord's holiness and righteousness in the land for all the earth to see. In order to inherit that land, we too have to be in agreement with the authority of the law in our lives. The Lord will not allow lawlessness in Israel. But the caveat about that was that when they broke the covenant, it meant that Yeshua had to die because he put himself on the line on their behalf. Let me make this simple. A lot of people, I know most of you don't have a hard time understanding this, but I have talked with people who don't understand this concept. So let me just break it down like this. If I co-sign for a car with my son, and my son does not pay that monthly payment, I'm liable for it. I have to make the payment. That's the meaning of the Genesis 15 covenant. Yeshua signed up for his people to inherit the land and created a law for them to live by in the land. And the blood of this covenant and the blood of that earlier covenant stretch out their hands to each other and grasp hold. And now the children of Israel have agreed to the terms of their inheritance. So when they mess up, it's on Yeshua's shoulder. See? And guess what the terms of the Genesis 15 covenant were? Death. But our praise is to him for going ahead and paying that price that he knew was coming when he made the deal. 1 Peter 2:24. Who has his own self bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, being dead to sins, should live to righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. I hope this teaching has been a blessing. Shabbat Shalom.